Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, batter, 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 swing.
No! Foul ball.
Why did we, like, did you play baseball where you yelled that while the guy's trying to bat?
I always thought the yelling was stupid. Yeah, I guess we talk crap, but that was so overdone. We'd just be mean to each other, I guess.
Yeah. Shit talk is one thing, but I'm talking about there was just like I was on teams in Little League where we would just all just say the same chant. like what is somebody really going to swing at the wrong time if you're yelling, "Hey, batter, batter, swing!" Like a, you know, like you're really going to psych somebody into swinging at the wrong time? I don't think it ever happens.
Yeah, it feels like white noise.
Yeah.
It's like so overdone. Yeah, I mean, it's like, sure, whatever.
I guess when you get to the pros, like the whole stadium is full of yelling people. So, like, they probably can't even hear each other very well. You know what I mean? They probably couldn't, they probably couldn't yell, "Hey, swing!" You know, to throw somebody off. Anyway, our guest today is a comedian whose name almost rhymes with hilarious. if you pronounce it weird, I guess it would, but I'm going to try to say it the right way. But we're also going to get into it with her because I think there's more than one way to pronounce her name. Anyway, it's Lisa Delarios,
and she's hilarious.
See, let's go to work. Hello, Lisa Delarios.
Hello. I thought that theme song was kind of fun.
Hey.
I think that's how I described it to you before we started the show.
Yeah. Yep. That's how you described it.
It's kind of fun.
Hi, boy.
It's kind of aggressive.
Hello.
Hi.
It somewhat resembles fun. That's what I like about it, is that it's aggressive and scary sounding somehow, even though there's also a child involved. But Lisa, how are you?
Well, I'm reporting here from Pasadena, California, and everything's great. It's very chill in Pasadena.
Have you seen that little old lady?
In fact, I live in the attic of three old ladies.
Whoa, an attic. I stayed in an attic in Pasadena once because I grew up in San Diego and we did a choir trip to, do some sort of competition or some shit in Pasadena. And that was my first experience with Pasadena, is that there was like volunteers, people let us all sleep in their homes. They'd set up some sort of thing. So I just slept upstairs in some lady's house.
It might be where I live now.
I'm just picturing that, you know, it's giving me I feel like I'm there. You really.
Did you leave a time capsule for of some kind?
Ooh.
I don't think so.
Doug Mellard, are you thinking like something Amelie-esque?
Yeah. I've definitely a couple times in the past left weird pictures and notes for people and poetry, like between weird crevices and like apartment, like between the oven and the wall, just a bunch of weird photographs of me with like butter on my face or whatever. And then weird poems. And then I don't get to see the payoff. I'm just like, someday somebody's going to laugh or be freaked out. It's going to be great.
In weird crevices.
Those like, you're not there for the payoff pranks are the weirdest. But
that's
you know.
So true. That's so true. That is true commitment to the bit.
It's gonna make somebody's day sometime.
Yeah, or like when you change a sign or something, and then you don't stick around to see people seeing the sign and laughing at what it, you know. I just found recently an old photograph somewhere that there was a. I don't think it was a church. I think it was like more like a theater or something that had a play called Father Doug. But for some reason, Father Doug was with those little letters that squish into the board and stick to it. You know, little corkboard letters. And it said Father Doug. So I flipped over the U, so it changed it to Father Dong. And in that case, I did take a picture of it. So I'm happy that I did, because I just switched it back right away because I couldn't stick around long enough to see the reaction. Or maybe I just left and left it that way. But either way, I wish there probably is somewhere in the world someone named Father Dong. But we're here to talk to you, Lisa, about your lack of a dong. We want to know. Now, okay, so you're in Pasadena now. But where you and I met and like hung out via stand-up comedy in Austin, Texas.
Yes, that's where you and I met. I think for the first time you were headlining at Cap City, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, did I like open for you or something?
Or feature or something?
Probably featured. It was probably featured.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say that was maybe 2012-ish.
Oh, okay.
I have no idea, actually.
I was thinking further back, but maybe that's the thing, is maybe I saw you around and then somehow you ended up being on my shows because I knew you already.
Yeah.
But not well. And this is a weird memory I have now, because, of course, you also know Doug Mellard from Austin, because, that's where he got his start in comedy after you had already been doing it there, I think.
Well, I actually started comedy in New York City.
Right.
In the 90s. And then I moved to Austin after I'd been doing stand-up for probably like 5 or 6 years, maybe more.
Oh, okay.
And so Doug, you were already there, like on the scene. You were like one of the hot shots in Austin when I moved there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I was trying to figure out where you started, because I thought you were established before you came to town.
I wouldn't go that far as to say I was established.
Maybe season, though, because years of New York stand-up must have, when you got to Austin, you must have had it together pretty much.
I guess I had developed a little bit of some chops at that point.
Yeah.
You know when that was? Doug Mellard? That was, and Doug Benson. Hey, Doug.
Hey.
That was, when I first moved to Austin was 2004.
Okay, so I bet you guys met somewhere, I bet way back around then, because
I think 2006 or 7 is when we met.
Yeah, because it's probably the same time frame of when I met you, I bet.
I think so, because I started coming to Austin a lot after the first time I came there for South by Southwest.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe that time that you worked with me might have been there the same weekend as South by Southwest, because I thought I was clever. You know, I had this movie playing at South By, and I was like, oh, I'm going to like double dip and go to this festival. Cause I wasn't that, familiar with South By. I knew it was a big thing, a big deal, but I was like, I'm going to go to this festival. But while I'm there, I might as well headline Cap City that weekend. And then, the shows were great and I love Cap City, but like, it just kept me away from this film festival where my film was playing and everyone was loving it.
Oh my God!
It was just such a dumb decision on my part, and nobody helped me to guide me. Everyone was just like, "Yeah, that sounds great. You should do stand up while your movie's here." So, like the first night my movie played, I like introduced it and didn't even do the Q&A after, because I had to go do sets at Cap City.
Oh shit!
Oh my God! That,
and all these years later, I'm like, oh, my movie debuted on Friday night at the Paramount Theater at South by Southwest, and I just skipped.
Oh my God. So committed to seeing, so committed to your stand-up. So committed.
But now since then I've learned, I've seen some of like the most exciting movie experiences I've ever had have been in that same theater.
Absolutely. Because
the movies they get to premiere there are just crazy. Like it's,
yeah, I mean that's a gorgeous old theater. Like what an amazing opportunity that you missed.
And it's got well, you know, I mean I've since been there a lot and been on that stage a few times and stuff. So like I feel like I sort of became like for a few years after the first time I went, I became like kind of a Austin mascot or a South by mascot where like I would just be like walking around and everyone was so into the whole weed thing at that point that like I would just be like constantly past things just walking down 6th Street, you know. And so I was really into South by I still love it. I'm going to come again next year, but I like really, really liked how friendly everybody was, you know. It was really it felt like everywhere I went it felt like I was like in a parade or something.
I mean when you were there, I mean you're probably right, I bet you that was South by Southwest because I remember feeling kind of festive. And I do remember we all went to do karaoke one night at that
that's what I have written down right here. It sounds like a bank.
We always forget the name of it.
Common Interest.
Yes.
That's it.
It does sound like a bank.
It does.
I never thought of that. That's so funny.
No, when everyone was like, because first we had to leave the weird mall that Cap City used to be in with the Dracula restaurant.
Yeah.
We had to like leave that weird mall to go to another weird mall that had karaoke that outside it said Common Interest. Like, what the hell is this even?
Yeah.
And it was a bar that had karaoke, and I always remember not remembering the name of that place.
Yeah, they had a popcorn machine. I do remember that. I'd always have
Jello shots served in syringes.
Yes!
So bizarre.
Yes! And Mark, I feel like Mark the bartender would always walk into the room with a bunch of those syringes for everybody, the Jello shots.
Yeah.
I'd shoot those suckers. You kidding me? Right down the hatch.
I'd do it. Yeah.
Everyone was like, this is Common Interest. This is the place to go. And I was just like, what? Because I was still like, hadn't really seen that much of downtown Austin because I didn't do it right the first time. And so like I was like, these couple of strip malls I've been to in Austin they're not as cool as this, everyone's making this place out to be.
Keep Austin strip malls weird.
That's right. Yeah. That's definitely North Austin. It's very strip mall-y.
Yeah, have you seen Lisa, have you been around this new Cap City at all? Have you gotten to look at it?
No, I haven't. I haven't been back to Austin in a decade. I haven't been there in so long.
Oh, wow.
Is it something you want to do, go back and visit, or are you not that drawn to it?
You know, I mean, if I'm going to like go to the trouble of like buying a plane ticket and getting a cat sitter and all that, like I'd rather go to Spain, you know.
There's other destinations you'd be more into, and like I guess like a lot of the people that you associated with at the time you were there have probably moved somewhere else.
Mostly here in LA. Like when I left, when I left, it was like a mass exodus of comics from Austin. So I really, I know maybe like 5 comics that are still in Austin that I was friends with. I mean, there's probably more, but that I can just think of right off the top of my head.
Yeah. And you could see them if you wanted to, like when they're rolling through LA or whatever.
Yeah. Like Doug Mellard, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, I do miss having you around, Doug, seeing you.
Yeah.
Your lovely wife. Wait, why am I blanking on your wife's name? I love her.
Flynn.
Yes.
And Penny, of course.
Oh, you still have Penny. That's amazing.
Yeah. 15 and going strong.
Oh, she's young.
Yeah.
I wish dogs could outlive us. That'd be so cool.
I know, but then the thing is, if they did, then who would take care of them? They have to be taken care of.
If they're a good boy, or girl and they're cute enough, everyone has a friend that wishes that your dog was their dog. I bet you so many people covet Penny that if heaven forbid, Doug and the missus got into something happened to them, Penny would be in good hands, I think.
Yeah, like we're going out of town soon and people are fighting over who's going to watch.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I've never had that problem.
Well, that's the problem with cats is nobody's like, I want to take care of your cat. Nobody asked for that.
No, nobody asked for that. And even when I had dogs, though, even if my friends watch my dogs, I always pay them. But this is L.A. Like, you got to pay people for everything.
Yeah.
It's true. And, and there's also plenty of opportunities to foster, dogs instead of borrowing them from your friends. But I currently have a dog running around my apartment because a friend of mine has a cute dog that I borrow from time to time.
Oh.
Yeah. What kind? It's fun. I don't know what he is. He's like, he's like manages to be a Chihuahua, but kind of big.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, nice. Yeah. He's like he's part short Chihuahua, hair? But something else got involved. Yeah. Yeah. He's,
something else got involved.
Some other kind of doggy.
Well, do you all know that I am, my job now is I'm a dog trainer? Did you know that?
Well, that's why I won't shut up about dogs, because I'm so excited to talk to you about dogs. I just, I can't even segue into it, in a natural way, because it's just at the forefront of my mind right now. So, yes, tell us about your dog training. Like, when did you start training dogs?
Well, technically when I moved to LA in 2017, I was introduced to Sarah Dubochet, who's the wife of Andre Dubochet, who's a comedian. Mm. And so I had worked, I've always loved animals. Everyone that knows me knows that about me. And my last 2 years in New York City, I worked for the ASPCA, the giant animal welfare organization, and I was doing outreach work in the South Bronx. And that was like a full-time gig. I actually stopped doing stand-up at all during those 2 years because it took all of my time and energy, and it was amazing work, but I wasn't a trainer. I was basically like going into these low-income communities and trying to connect people with pets to resources and it was kind of like the program was to try to prevent people from surrendering their pets to the shelter. Because oftentimes it's people that don't have the resources that end up for whatever reason having to give up their pets. And then these dogs end up in the shelter. And then we've got this huge crisis of homeless dogs and cats. And so during that job at the ASPCA, I definitely started to notice that one of the biggest reasons that people would feel that they couldn't keep their dogs was for behavioral issues. And so it sparked an interest in like, I wish I really knew the secret to how to train dogs, how to communicate with dogs. And so anyway, that job, it definitely had an expiration date. Like emotionally, I could only take. I did it for 2 years. Yeah, Liz, the shit I saw. Good God, some animal hoarding stuff that was like, bananas. I won't go into details. Not funny, but anyway.
Was there cat juggling like in The Jerk?
Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You want to make this horrifying topic cute? Go ahead.
Yeah. Let's just say there was some cat juggling. So that job, when I quit that job, then I decided I'm going to move back to, well, I won't go into all my movings because I did go to Austin for a second again, but then I ended up back coming to LA and I needed a job. And I met Sarah Dubochet. She was a certified dog trainer and we had coffee. She was like, "You're great. I'm going to hire you. We'll train you." And so it was really through a comedy connection that I got the ball rolling on becoming an actual dog trainer. So I mentored with a trainer who was amazing. Her name was Claire.
Did she give you treats every time you did something right?
She definitely used positive reinforcement, which, by the way, we all learn this way. I've never wanted to do a better job when someone told me I sucked. So,
right.
You know, true. Just saying, hey, I like how you did that is positive reinforcement.
Yeah.
So she gave me lots of positive reinforcement, and then I started getting paid, which was also positive reinforcement. that was 5 years ago, and I went on to kind of, I left working for that company. I think it was, I kind of had a little imposter syndrome because that's, you guys know what imposter syndrome is, or is that just women that deal with this?
I'm familiar with it.
Yeah. You know, it's like, and also I was in my freaking 40s and trying to learn a whole new skill, which is, you got, as we all know, as comics, you got to suck at something before you get actually good at it.
Yeah.
And that was really hard for me. But the good thing is that I knew that it was the thing I love. Like, I was like, oh, this is it. This is my thing. And so I was so motivated to get past the sucking part because I really wanted to learn how to truly change behavior and communicate with dogs in a way that was humane and effective. Wow, that sounded like I was like some sort of commercial.
Are you running for the office of veterinarian?
Hell no.
So what's your, like, are there different, it's kind of like acting, I think, and dog training and acting are similar in that, you know, depending on who you talk to, there's all these different disciplines. Of how to apply discipline.
Yeah. In fact, in the dog training world right now, a lot of people don't know this, but there's like an all out war going on. Like,
yeah, I bet.
It's like politics. It's completely divided. There's the old way, and then there's the modern way that's very, it's science-based. It's like, there's no, it's not like this guy's got some sort of magic touch, so he's doing it right. There's no, there's no magic touch. It's literally it's science. It's learning theory. It is how all organisms learn. And the thing is, the old way of training dogs was very punitive based because people didn't know better because sure. There wasn't, it's just like with anything, you know, like as there's more research and studies and now animal behavior is like a huge area of study. And so there's just been so many, basically like every single scientific body that's, you know, related to animal behavior has come out and said 100% the most effective way to train a dog is with positive reinforcement, which means not using pain or intimidation, which, you know, that was the old way, like, you know, using choke
like
chains.
No used to be a command, a specific command.
Yeah.
Just saying no.
Yeah.
Just being negative.
And the thing is that unfortunately on TV, if you're doing dog training the correct way, and there is a correct way, and I'm not just saying that because it's the way I do it. If you're doing dog training the way Lisa does it, then it's not necessarily sensational. Like, it doesn't look dramatic, which is why they don't really have TV shows where people are doing it the right way. Although there are a couple, like there's, and of course, in the UK.
Well, you could
we got one here
hat.
Called Lucky Dog.
Okay, so Lucky Dog. Yeah, Lucky Dog is now, once upon a time, it was this guy, Brandon McMillan.
Mm-hmm.
He still uses some like real dumb shit, like shake a can of coins. He's like,
I never saw him shake a can of coins on there. That's hilarious.
He literally has the masterclass, like the masterclass. This just goes to show you, like, whoever runs masterclass, they're like, this guy, Brennan McMillan, because he's
they'll
on
just
TV.
Pick somebody who's known for something. I don't think they really care how.
If they're really,
they are at it, you know?
Right. What are their credentials? Like, how does,
it's,
you know,
a lot of its opinion of whether or not he's the best dog trainer.
It's because he's like, hunky, you know? And he's on TV. Yeah.
Yeah. He was funny on TV because he was never totally natural on camera. And then I have a theory that because now the show is this couple where the man's a dog trainer and the girl is like a animal psychiatrist or something. And they work together to find homes for these dogs. Just basically just in the LA, like Calabasas area. But the show doesn't travel. But Brandon had like these rules, you know, he'd say, these are the things you need to train dogs, you know, sit, lay down, you know, he had like five commands that he said were the ones to do. And now this new couple have changed it, and it's like seven commands, and one of Brandon's is missing. So I'm just responding to your, like, how people can have different opinions of how these things should be done, when in fact there probably is just one best way.
Well, I'm impressed that you know so much about Lucky Dog and the evolution
I love Lucky Dog. I mean, but it's really funny because, oh, that's what I was going to say, is I think that he got pushed out or quit or something over the fact that the show has really gotten to a point now where it's clearly being paid. They're making the money they're using to make it is coming from dog medicine companies. Like the big pharma of animals and dogs. So, like, you know, there's this drug they're always bringing up that they say is good for, you know, when a dog is injured or something, with a Q, like quercetin or something, or
quercetin.
So every episode's brought to you by quercetin. So that makes me like look at the TV funny. Like, wait, what? So this whole thing about how we should treat dogs better is run by a for-profit company that's making a drug that they probably charge people too much for.
Oh my God, that's interesting. You're so smart, Doug Benson.
Well, or I just, you know, don't know what's going on and just have my own theory. But I think that's why he stopped doing the show, because there started to be more and more of that. Like, they'd have these little scenes where he'd have to talk to a veterinarian. Like, he'd bring in a dog and he'd be giving him a checkout, and they'd have to talk about Consequin or whatever it's called. And you know, and he'd have to have conversations about his stuff. So I think that's where, but you know, the rubber could hit the road just about anywhere when it comes to but the way they replace this guy, if you watch an old episode of Lucky Dog with him and then a new one with this couple, the intro is all the same words, but the new couple is saying wee, wee, wee the whole time. But it's all the stuff Brandon said about what he does and what he's doing. They just didn't even rewrite the copy. They changed it to "we do this." So it's like, when they first took over, I hated them because I was just like, these people fucking took Brandon's show. But but now that you mention it, it does make sense that Brandon's training might have also been a little sketchy.
Well, I mean, I guess all TV shows have commercial, like have some corporation behind them.
Oh, you know, sure. Absolutely. But not in the body of the show. Plus, also, the show is part of CBS's, you know, every network has to have, every TV network or channel has to do like 2 hours of educational and informative programming. I think spread out over the week. So like what CBS does is they do like a few hours of shows about animals and science on Saturday mornings. So why I got into Lucky Dog, because it's on every Saturday, but it's got that little symbol in the corner that means it's educational.
Oh my God, I didn't know any of this.
Even though you're just watching a show about a cute dog learning how to sit, you know.
Well, I guess, props to Quercetin for giving a shit. If they were like, actually, we should maybe have trainers that are using the most modern science-based technique, I mean, I don't, you know, Cesar Millan, not the case. He is using a lot of outdated techniques. He doesn't have credentials. He calls himself a dog psychologist. Like, his center is the dog psychology center. I don't think he's read a book about dog training. If he ever has, it hasn't been in like 30 years, because he's so using just archaic, you know, logic and it's stuff that's, he doesn't know how to read dog body language. Like, he'll just blatantly call like, oh, that dog is yawning, that means he's really calm. And it's like, no, that actually is a sign of stress. When a dog is yawning and they're not tired, like, dog body language is like a big part of understanding behavior. What's the emotional component going on? And there's also been recent studies where literally the scientist who studied human brains decided he wanted to try and do the same thing with dogs. And he worked with a positive reinforcement trainer, and they trained dogs to go into MRI machines, which is bananas. Because and they were conscious, because if you want to, because they wanted to look and see what they were trying to understand, the like the social part of the brain and what parts of the brain light up, you know, when they see their owner, for example, you know, or hear a cue that their owner gives them that means the treat is coming or whatever. And they trained these dogs over a few months, you know, just like baby steps, one clicker at a time, train these dogs to be conscious in a tube, an MRI machine, and not move.
A machine that's constantly banging, making horrible noises.
The noise, so they conditioned them. Yeah, they conditioned them to the sounds, you know, they conditioned them slowly, which is how you get dogs, you condition dogs to anything, you know, getting their nails clipped. You just start by, here's the nail clipper, here's a cookie, here's the nail clipper, here's a cookie.
Yeah.
And that's literally how it works. And then, so what the findings were basically, and there's been a couple studies similar, is that dogs are emotionally and socially the same as a human toddler, a three-year-old child. Their emotion, you know, their the complexity of their emotional lives. And so to me, if there's what could be more evidence that we need to treat them humanely and with respect when it comes to teaching them, because that's what training is. It's teaching them life skills, because these aren't humans, but they are being forced to live in a human world, and even as being pets is a new thing relatively for dogs, because once upon a time dogs were mostly for jobs, you know, they were, but all of a sudden, you know, in a very short amount of time, they are all sitting in people's houses and not really getting the enrichment that they are programmed to get. So, you know, and also they completely depend on humans for their everything. You know, when do I eat? When do I go to the bathroom? They're completely dependent on us. And so the least we can do is give them the skills, you know, to know how to live in, you know, to guide them and give them the skills to live in this strange world that they're in without using, you know, a choke chain or, you know, or shoving their face in there when they have a potty accident. It's like,
that one is so weird to me.
It's so weird, but it's like, but this is also has to do with people misreading dog body language. For example, you look on YouTube and people post videos of their dogs they think are funny. They're like, look how guilty. Did you do this? And the dog's like, looking down and looking to the side, and to humans, we're like, oh, see, he's guilty. He knows he did something bad. When actually the dog is literally just trying, it's appeasement behavior. They're trying to avoid conflict. Those are all things. And dogs do, that's what dogs do to each other to avoid conflict. They look away.
Oh, true. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're not guilty. They're not like, Oh, I did the bad thing. I feel so guilty.
No, they have those sweet puppy dog eyes because they have sweet puppy dog eyes. That's yeah. how they look, you know?
Exactly.
Like they're going to look at you like that.
Yeah,
it's, and that's, you know, it's in the eye of the beholder. It's like whatever you decide the dog is thinking, you could make it
right.
That. Yeah, they're just trying to stay alive, you know. They're like evolution gave them these sweet puppy dog eyes to keep them alive.
Yeah, it works. Like, you know, I mean, it should work better than it does, but that there's any animal cruelty at all is just insane because they're so damn adorable. And you know, and they need us, but we need to go to a break. This is like flying by. I'm so excited about this topic. I cannot tell you.
I love it.
Yeah, it's great. So we're going to go to a quick break. But we'll be right back.
Okay.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we're back to Wide World of Dogs. Dogs, yeah!
We are bark, I mean back, and we are talking. We are talking about dogs and just how awesome they are. And so this is what's been happening with me is I have a borrowed dog from time to time because a friend of mine has a cute dog and he has a busy enough life that, like, you know, it's good for him and the dog to, like, hand him off to me for a few days. He hangs out with me and my girlfriend. We have a lovely time.
So great.
Pretending we have a dog. But mm-hmm. He's like 4 years old, and I heard recently, you know, people think like there's some sort of cutoff for when dogs stop learning things. You know, that expression, you can't teach an old dog new tricks.
Yes.
And that's insane, right? Like,
yes,
dogs are ready to learn their entire lives.
That's absolutely false.
Yeah.
That's like saying people can't learn past the
Well, some can't, unfortunately.
Well, good point. But that's probably due. Like,
we saw some video of this dog that learned all this vocabulary with, like, toys and stuff. But it was, like, an insane amount, like hundreds or something. So after Penny was probably 12, we taught her, like, I don't know, at least 20 new vocab words.
See?
Where, like at age 12, yeah, dogs are, if smart dogs especially are going to be smart dogs, but yeah, they can all learn new stuff.
They can all learn.
Especially when they're getting positive reinforcement
and
treats and, you know, in the food, you know, the things you're already giving them, if you're a good dog owner, is you're feeding them and you're petting them. So to just do those things in a way where you do them right after they did something you want them to do seems like so easy and natural. So like I'm teaching this dog that's like the owner of the dog, the dog, he wouldn't even want to try to teach him a trick. He didn't think he'd be able to learn.
Aww.
And I'm teaching this dog shit just every time he stays with me, I, you know, train him a little bit.
I love that.
And
you know
it's
what?
So fun. I love doing it. I think I would be impatient as a actual trainer. Because there are lots of circumstances that come into it that make each case unique, right?
Well, training the humans is what you would find frustrating. That's the part.
But I mean, also though, like it does with each dog, you are going to go through different obstacles in terms of their, you know, ability to learn. You know, just their own past trauma can affect things you're trying to teach them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And it can be slow moving sometimes. Like, I mean, so there's training and then there's behavior modification, and behavior modification is more psychology, where you're trying to undo trauma, like dogs that have extreme anxiety or fear. And so like reactivity is the term for basically when dogs overreact to some trigger, and it could be, you know, in certain contexts only. Like a lot of dogs, the moment they're outside on leash, they become reactive. Like when they see a skateboard or a bicycle or another dog or anything, you know, some dogs are really reactive. And I actually I've had a client dog, Barkley. He's 80 pounds and he's some sort of golden mix. He's gorgeous. But so reactive that he pulled his person over on leash. He was, you know, seeing another dog and pulling and lunging and barking, and she broke her elbow because, you know, the dog pulled her over. And
yeah,
and she had another dog trainer tell her, you can't afford to fix this problem. Like, it's just going to be too expensive. And good thing she got my number. Lisa under earner Delarios. but I have been working with this dog since last October. And I work with him one-on-one. I take him out. We started out, I would do 3 days a week. And I just take him out for like an hour and a half. And I'm still working with him. Now I do 2 days a week, but, I have seen tons of progress, but he's still not fixed. I mean, and it's not necessarily a thing that will ever entirely be fixed, but he can handle so much more than he could before. He's just able to kind of, he doesn't overreact. He sort of understands now, like, oh, you know, he's had enough experience seeing the trigger and not having his big reaction, and things are okay. So, I've trained him other alternative behaviors to do and then also I've used counter conditioning to change his feelings about these triggers. And I use, you know, like baked chicken, something that he really, really thinks is super awesome. But anyway, my point is that, yeah, sometimes that kind of stuff can take longer, but you know, it's just like with people, if you can't fix trauma in 3 hours,
right? That's why, yeah, people have to go to therapy and stuff for years and years.
Yeah,
but what about when you're training? I watch these trainers on TV, like, you know, these TV trainers. I see them, and I see how, like, when they're teaching the dog something, they're like pretty much constantly giving them little treats. And I know they're small treats, but isn't there the potential for overfeeding an animal while you're trying to train it?
I'm glad you brought that up, Doug. Because part of, you know, like the people who are anti-food and dog training, it's a big part of the, and also so positive reinforcement means you add something desirable following the behavior that you like you said, Doug. But anything a dog likes can be used as a reinforcer. So it doesn't have to be food. Food is almost every dog's different. You know, some dogs aren't food motivated. It's rare, but there are some dogs, especially like high drive dogs, and they'll work for a quick game of tug.
Right.
You can imagine, that's not as efficient, like as just popping a cookie in the mouth, you know. But so with training, eventually what you want to get the food, you want to get the food out of the picture actually as quickly as possible. But you don't ever want to completely stop reinforcing a behavior. But once you see that a behavior is pretty much learned and well established, then you start intermittent reinforcement. So, and actually they find that the learning lasts longer if you start, you know, if you do lessen the food rewards.
If they don't get the food every time,
yeah,
they still, in their mind, the possibility of the food is enough.
Exactly. Like
to you make them do it again.
Yeah. Like there's the possibility, like we're a slot machine basically. So you start like when I first teach sit, for example, you know, when you're first teaching it, it's a brand new skill. You're asking a lot. It's like learning anything new. It's really hard for them. And so, yes, you're going to reinforce every time. You're going to be like, sit, good job, treat, sit, good job, treat. But then, you know, once you're like, okay, they've got sit down. So, well, they've got sit. Then you're going to maybe start giving them that food reward every third time that they sit. And I always use praise. So if I'm not going to use a food reward, then I'll just use praise, which is somewhat reinforcing for most dogs. Just say, good job, or good boy, or whatever.
Yeah.
So they know, because they're so smart. Like, and I'll even tell people, like, don't ever, ever miss the opportunity to tell your dog good job when they do something, even if it's just when you call their name and they're looking at something else and they turn back when they hear you call their name. At least say good job. Like, don't, you know, because I've seen the look on dogs' faces where they're kind of like, hey man, I'm just
give me something.
I was about to sniff that thing. I was looking at that squirrel and I took my attention away and you didn't even acknowledge it. Not to anthropomorphize, but yeah. So another thing about the food is when you're in the first, like in the beginning of training, like if you have a puppy, you're going to be doing lots of rewards, you just want to go. I mean, obviously you're using them strategically. You're not just throwing food at them. You're using it very strategically with timing. Like after the behavior that you like, the treat is in the mouth as soon as possible. So that they connect the behavior with the reward.
Yeah.
When you're early in the training stages, then if the dog likes their kibble or their dog food, if they're actually motivated by that, I'm like, use their meal times for training,
mm-hmm.
rather than just pour the food into a bowl. Like, make it a.
Well, that's what we've been doing though, is doing the bowl food like after something, you know, as sort of time it with a kind of a reward, but also, you know, it's time for a meal anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And you could even do like part of the meal, you could do a little, like train some tricks or behaviors. And then the other part you could put into a snuffle mat. You know what a snuffle mat is?
I have an idea.
Yeah. So
like a thing that they have to work to get it out of the inside of it.
Yeah. It's a little enrichment activity. So it's just like a little fabric mat with little flaps of fabric. And so you just kind of like scatter the treats in there, so they have to like use their nose and snuffle around in there. And I don't know, any dog doesn't love a snuffle mat.
Yeah, no, they're just, it's really a fun activity for them. That sounds good. I should get my hands on one of those.
Get your hands on a snuffle mat.
Yeah.
Or just toss them in the yard, even in the grass. Like just toss, you know, a handful of kibble in the grass and let them sniff around for it.
Right. Well, that's, you know, that's definitely something like I have to put the treats like all over the house because I don't want him to fixate on a specific room. You know what I mean? I don't want a room to be associated with, oh, this is where I'll go sit here and whine if I want to eat, you know?
Yeah.
No, that's
but I
smart.
Got lucky. We got lucky with this dog though, because like that's part of the reason why we like dog sitting with this particular dog, because he does not care about squirrels or other dogs one lick. Like every once in a while, I meet a dog that he gets kind of interested in, but just to stand around and sniff and, you know, maybe play a little bit or something. But like most dogs walking by, he doesn't even look twice. It's crazy.
Oh, he sounds lovely.
Yeah, it is a really nice quality to have. Although I was really trying to get him excited about a squirrel the other day, because this squirrel was like in a tree talking to us. The squirrel was just like, and we were just sitting there looking up at him, and I couldn't get the dog excited about the squirrel.
That's funny. Like, I mean, really, that is a gift, a dog that's not into hunting.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
whole thing.
I don't know what his deal is, but he's just got little peculiar things that he does that, you know, you just don't know. Because I think the current owner got him as like a rescue, I think, or something like that. And then so he didn't know his whole backstory. And so we know even less. But he's got some things that he does. But now I taught him how to, shake hands. And
cute.
But now when he wants food, he starts sticking his hand out like, let's shake.
Yeah. So that's something I don't teach a lot of dogs to give paw or shake because I find that because the thing is what dogs will do is they'll start offering all the behaviors that they've learned.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because it gives them a way of asking for things. That's, you know, the good news rather than barking at you or, you know. So I would just make sure that you don't give him the thing that he wants when he's just, you know, forcing his paw on you. All.
That's when I have to I put my foot down, but I don't be mean about it. And then I also shake his hand sometimes and just say good boy and there is no treat. So I figured that out on my own to back up the treats a little bit, but I still just was just concerned because you just see these people on Lucky Dog, they want to train this dog in a day or two, and so they spend all day training it. It just feels like that's just overfeeding the dog or getting them too into the treats. So that's good to hear from you that you know, even the TV show, they're probably giving more positive reinforcement off camera, but it's just not as clear to the viewer that he did a trick. So now he gets this treat, you know?
Right. And they should address on the show the you know, how you taper off the treats. Because I find a lot of people, they start by using treats. You know, you use a treat to lure a dog into a position. Like if you're teaching a dog down, you have the cookie in your hand and you're lowering your hand to the ground and they follow it. And then once they're in the down position, you give them the treat. But a lot of people will keep doing that lure permanently. Whereas I get rid of the lure as soon as possible. So
yeah,
I want the food to come from actually another hand. So the hand that you're using to teach them the behavior, that becomes your visual cue. So, you know, it starts with a hand going down towards the ground. And then the more you practice it, you start making your hand, your visual cue / hand signal, you start to make that more subtle. So eventually you're just doing this little tiny flick of your hand while you're standing up and you don't have to lower your hand all the way to the floor. if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. You know, the show is about names. We talk to people about their name, and we ate up all your time talking about dogs.
Oh, that's what the show's about?
Yeah, we, you know, since we're both Dougs, and, you know, I'll just say this one thing before we inviting you to come back sometime and actually talk about your name, because we really do have a lot of questions about it, and you know, we have a lot of questions we ask everybody, but I just want to ask you about if you think there's any connection between Delerios. Well, first of all, is it dealer's choice? Do people go Delerios, Delerios? Do they make that change there on their own and you don't correct them on it?
Yes, absolutely. And I don't I don't correct them because I also alternate.
Okay. So that was the one thing I really wanted to know. But then that leads into how similar the name is to hilarious.
Yes.
Is there some nominative determinism going on there? Like, do you think that part of the reason you became a comedian or became funny per se is because of hilarious delirious?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say yes. yeah, I mean, I don't know, because I was always like of my small friend group, because I grew up in East Texas. Yeah, I was definitely like the card, trying to make everybody laugh all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, there's just something to me, like people, my friends used to call me by my last name, like, hey, what's up, Delarios? Like, I don't know, there's something kind of silly sounding about my name, I think. And maybe that did just kind of, I just somehow processed that. I don't know. And Doug Mellor, you might remember when I briefly had an opener. I've always struggled with an opener. But I used to say that my new stage name was Miso Hilarious.
Yeah, that's probably not as fun today as it was back then.
No.
Become more in, it was always silly, but it became more inappropriate, I guess. But well, you know, I would love to have you come back to the show sometime, and then I'll try to not ask you so many things about dogs, and we can get into what we really are here to talk about. But this is real.
Yeah, we won't hate it if we get back into dogs. And then
that's what I'm
back.
Saying. I said I'd try. I don't know.
We'll see.
I go on. I mean, it's not I good. Love it. I talk a we've lot had, about dogs.
We've had a few guests on the show where we haven't gotten to the questions because something else, we got into something else. And one of our guests, it took three appearances before we got into the actual material.
Okay.
Yeah, so who knows? Maybe that could happen again, because I already have another question about dogs.
Same.
What does it mean if a dog does a lot of stretching? If, like, every time it gets up from a nap or from a sleep, or just really likes stretching. Like, is there something going on with a dog if they like to stretch a lot?
Like downward dog kind of thing?
Yeah, like you'll get into these stretch positions and, like, really... It really seems like a person, like, working out, you know, their issues with their
I actually think that's a dog who's feeling good. I think that's a dog that's feeling content, and it's like just a natural healthy thing that they do.
Yeah,
you can train him to
enjoy doing it, you know.
you should capture that behavior. You should train him to do it on cue, so you could call it bow. Whatever, you could come up with a real even cuter, you know, you could say downward dog. Like, anything that you see that your dog does naturally, you can teach him to do it on cue.
Oh, that's so cute. Because he also does that natural, like, he likes to lay on his stomach with all his legs splayed out.
Oh, so cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could probably teach him an army crawl pretty easily.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That which they teach dogs that they want to do, like, you know, they want to have a dog act where they have to crawl under something.
That's right. That's right. You could still get that.
Yeah.
You could still get that baby into Hollywood, you know?
Yeah. No, I don't think it's too late. I was watching America's Got Talent last night, and they had a dog act on, you know, it's one of those really hyper, like, border collie kind of dogs. And just the insane, without giving it treats at any point, I don't think, just this insane whole scene of all these things happening, the dog doing so many different things, you know, obviously in the right order because he's seeing his trainer setting him up, but it's got bits where he knocks the trainer over, knocks him into a trash can, all this shit. And, you know, the judges were all like, that's the best dog act we've ever seen. And every time I see a dog act on that show, I'm usually impressed by it.
But, I'm obsessed. I'm obsessed with that freestyle. It's called freestyle, where they do like these routines to music and the dog's doing.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I'm obsessed with these things. Oh, there was a new one I have to watch.
Yeah, it was on last night, and it was the second appearance this season, and the dog's name is Hurricane, and I forget the guy's name.
Oh, what a name.
But the dog and the guy have advanced now. They're going to the finals, which is like just 10 or 11 acts or something like that. But there was 11 acts last night, and they picked two, and one of them voted on by America was the dog act. So that was nice, too, to see the dog act. The third place was a country singer. So I was happy to see the dog act was more beloved by America.
Yeah.
I thought that was one for the team, this dog is, it was insane the number of behaviors that this dog could do, and just all, in an order that they had to rehearse quite a bit,
but that is called freestyle. That is a competitive dog sport called freestyle.
I want more freestyle because
it's my dream. It's my
it's
dream.
Super fun to watch.
One day you'll see me doing it. I'll be 80 years old. You can teach.
I want to see
this old dog new tricks.
Yeah. Right. Thank you, Lisa Delarios. Oh, so you've got another thing I saw recently that I got excited about, but I don't think I can be there. Is you've got some sort of dog event that you're involved with that's coming up?
Oh, I did. A fellow trainer and I created a dog training workshop, but we already had it. But
it happened already. Okay,
we're planning to do more. And
I'll keep an eye out for it. Where can people look for you and your, I mean, obviously they have to be in the LA area, but, where can they go to see your information?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you want private training, I'm in Los Angeles area, and they can reach me on Instagram at Lisa Delarios. And you know what we didn't talk about, which we will have to talk about on another episode. I'm inviting myself. Is that the Storage Wars element.
Yeah.
Do you not know that I was a regular, I was a cast member on Storage Wars for.
Okay. All right. See, I thought that was
I just saw
you
promoted.
I
didn't know.
Didn't watch. Yeah. I never saw it.
Yeah. Well, it's a whole nother funny thing we can talk about because it happened.
Oh yeah.
That's wild. Okay. Well, that's a great tease for your next appearance. We'll have to, figure out a date off mic. But thank you so much for being here.
It was such a treat. I miss both of you.
A treat, so to speak. And
I didn't even do that on purpose.
Yeah. Doug, what do you got to plug?
Well, this is kind of serendipitous. This is crazy. Find me on Instagram because, like, as of a couple days ago, we're trying to find this dog a home. We found this, or my brother-in-law in Houston. If you're in the Houston or Austin area, because we might bring him back this way, somebody dumped two dogs off at my brother-in-law's work, and they're both very cute. We already found one of them a home.
Oh, good.
But there's one left, and he's adorable. He's some sort of smallish terrier mix, younger guy. A lot of the vet stuff's already been taken care of. He's got a fresh new haircut. He's not neutered, but real sweet, really smart. And anyway, we're trying to find him a home. If you are interested in a cute dog, it's going to go pretty fast. We already got a lot of nibbles, but might as well cast a wide net. So find me on Instagram at Doug Mellard. This guy, a little black and brownish mix. He's so cute. But yeah, hit me up.
You're a good person. You're both good people.
Well, I don't have any dog plugs. I just have Doug plugs. I got shows coming up. I do, Doug Loves Movies and the Benson Movie Interruption around Los Angeles, various dates. So go to DougLovesMovies.com to find those if you're going to be in LA. And then I've got road shows coming up in several cities, including just added Tacoma and San Diego. I'm always going down to San Diego because that's where I'm from originally, as I said. But DougLovesMovies.com is where all of my dates are. And Lisa, we end every episode by just basically naming the episode. And it's always like some sort of pun or something with the word Doug in it that also relates to our guests. So I hope you enjoy.
I think I know this one.
You think so? Maybe. I don't know.
What is it?
Well, I just say it like as the closing line of the show. So thank you for being here. And as always, dog eat Doug world.
Yes! Got it.